Bills over the Titans 34-10 to improve to 5-2. What do we settle on? Outclassed.
Yes.
Friend of mine, Sue, texted to suggest we go with slap. The Bills slapped the Titans. Just consider it. Put it in the hopper. Tell me what you think.
I'm making a face. I don't know.
You're okay still with outclassed.
Yeah, I like outclassed way more than slapped, I would say.
Eric Wood with us West Her Hotline. Eric earlier got in touch to say he would have a conflict this time, but then only a few minutes ago responded again to say, no, I'm good. And so I'm thinking, you know, this is, of course, not anything you have to address here on the air, Eric, but I'm thinking maybe it was a pedicure. That's my guess. What you don't have to say, but that's just throwing that out there.
I think it was kid pickup and your wife stepped in. That's my guess.
No, it was neither. And so last week was a flat tire. This week was a golf tournament for, not to make this grim, a buddy of mine passed who was a veteran who always had me play in the USA Cares event every year with him. And his wife made me promise at the funeral a month ago that I would not miss the USA Cares event. And so I'm grateful that One Bills Live was flexible with me, and you guys were as well, but it ended up being pretty quick. So I thought it was going to be a longer day.
Gotcha.
And so glad to make the 4 p.m. time slot.
Well, good for you, Eric. Sounds like a very, very much a worthwhile thing. Sorry for your friend's loss there. But hopefully today felt good for everybody.
It did, for sure. Thank you.
Good. You're welcome. So a few times over the years, it's been many years now we've talked on these Mondays, I have wanted to ask you to start the conversation. What will you remember about this game you just called yesterday? And I don't know. This is one where I think there's a pretty good chance I will forget about this game, except for maybe Amari Cooper. Maybe that would be my pick. What do you think?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The Amari arrival and, you know, how that impacts things moving forward. Does that continue to maybe take attention off of Keon Coleman, who goes over 100 yards for the first time? Does it give them a man-to-man beater where, you know, no one would play man-to-man defense against the Bills for years, and some of that was Josh running the football and smashing man-to-man defense because of it. But, you know, this year has been the Bills have faced the highest percentage of man-to-man defense in the league because people don't fear the receivers. And then yesterday, you see Amari Cooper's impact immediately, I feel. There was a few times where he single-handedly beat it himself. He created a drive, likely drawing attention away from Khalil Shakir, where he catches five balls on one drive, and then Keon Coleman goes for 125 yards yesterday. So, to me, if I remember, it'll be the Amari Cooper arrival. Now, I also had my family at the game yesterday. It was their first Bills game of the year, so I'll remember that as well. We had a fun day. Josh posed with a picture with them after the game, and my stinking son, he wears the Josh Allen High School Fireball jersey to the game. Well, my wife takes him to the Bills store, and he wants a James Cook jersey. So when he got a picture with Josh, he had the James Cook jersey on. So we were messing with him about that.
That is too bad. Well, good for you that you did that. What a perfect day for it, too. You know, and Cooper, to further the narrative that, like, that is what you'll remember, I would agree, and especially how it started off. Like, that we might have to work to have that be. We'll see how his career ends up here as a Bill. But the first time they target him, it's a third down. It looks like a pretty easy pitch and catch. And it's what's the one negative about Cooper in the deal is that he was leading the league in drops. It's been a thing through his career. He will drop the ball on you. And there it is. First target, third down. Oh, no. But obviously, they got right before the game was over.
For sure. And I'm right there with you. And that leads to the first three and out of the game, which followed two other three and outs for the Bills offense. And so the Bills offense starts slow, and Amari had a chance to move the sticks early on in that one and couldn't get it done. I love the play in the red zone where, you know, he dices up the safety and the Bills score a touchdown, and he looks over at Keon Coleman before the play, and Keon Coleman motions with his right hand, kind of what Amari's supposed to do on the play, and he does it, and he gets a touchdown, and Josh trusts him enough to go to him in that instance. And so, you know, I think he's going to be a great addition to this team. You know, from what I've heard and seen over the past week, you know, it seems like we got a high-character guy who's not going to say a whole lot, which you don't necessarily need at this point. You need a guy who can come in and fit in and beat man-to-man coverage and draw attention off other guys. And you also have a guy who's had seven 1,000-yard seasons. He's a 10-year vet, and you got a young receiving core that could benefit from learning from a guy like Omari.
Including Coleman, who apparently now is like the sage of the wide receiver room, telling the other guys where to go, but worked. With Eric Wood, did you see a specific adjustment or two in the second half from what was a really ugly first half? I mean, Cooper emerging is a part of what resulted. I don't know. There was a little bit more of the get the ball out quickly, throw the ball, less, you know, what, committed, if that's not the right word, to running the ball and sort of playing slower, which has worked at times this year. But this game is the kind of game that I sort of take as an opportunity to point to, yeah, you know, Allen, 323, whatever it was, this is how I'm going to win if I'm going to win big.
Yeah, absolutely. And they put the ball in Josh's hands in the second half. Now, I felt like they got under center more in the second half, which helped the run game at times, but also leading off drives or first down plays with play action from under center seemed to free up some stuff down the field. And then defensively, you know, I just felt like, okay, you have Mason Rudolph coming into the game. You know, he's, you know, starting, you know, they make the quarterback switch and they just gave him too much easy stuff. Like, make him beat you down the field. Don't let him dink and dunk you with the play action rollout, dumps off to the tight end, the screens. And then really every time he dropped back to pass, he was attacking that linebacker level, just knowing they're in zone. Okay, we have three targets. You have essentially two defenders in the middle of the field. And I believe he started the game like 16 for 19. And in the second half, they just did a much better job of taking that away, not giving him anything easy. And, you know, they hold him to under 100 yards total in the second half. And then you're right. Look, when the offense isn't rolling and you can't stay in rhythm and you're struggling to get first downs, put the ball in Josh's hands. And I'm not saying every possession, if you give him three shots at getting a first down, dropping back and pass, it's going to work every time. But on a game where the run game's just not getting the chunk runs, and it wasn't a bad run output on the game, but okay, we get four, then we get two, third and four, and you punt. Okay, well, let's start taking chip shots, and the Bills did in the second half.
Yeah, I was especially keen to see them come out in the second half, Eric, throwing a lot of that, like the quick stuff to, like Mike is saying, the ball's coming out so fast, the stuff that was kind of parallel to the line of scrimmage. We've seen them do that to start games with both Kincaid and Shakir. I don't know that I've seen it at all in the second half. It felt like a different thing to do later on in a game, and it really worked for them to the tune of really when they were even comfortably ahead, they still were doing that, and I felt like it was sort of in place of your standard 4 minute. I know there weren't 4 minutes left in the game, but you know what I'm referring to. Like, yep. You know, run it out here. We're just going to run it and eat clock and kill the game. They used a quick, short, the quick-hitting, short passing game in place of that, and man, I love that.
I did too, and you know, the Bills start that final drive that Ray Davis capped off with a touchdown. They start it with the pass to Keon Coleman. As I say, they're just going to grind this one out, and the pass that went off of Keon's head at Houston, they completed it last week against the Jets. It's that old school, I always call it the Brett Favre of RPO. So before RPOs out of the shotgun were popular, the guy who made them popular was Brett Favre, because he started putting a slant route on the backside of run plays. And if you have an easy free access throw to the inside, no one knows it except for the guy who's running the slant on the backside and the quarterback that he's going to throw out of it. Well, it completely throws off the defense at times, and the Bills get 54 yards on that play to Coleman. And, you know, that's just another, you know, kind of play, another tool that the Bills have in their tool belt now. And the drive before that, where Shakir caught five passes, well, there was no risky throws on the play. You have right. A commanding lead. Okay, so they went back-to-back, you know, essentially wide receiver screens to both sides of the field. One, Spencer Brown just had a phenomenal block out in space. But you have back-to-back screens. You have a quick hitter over to the middle of the field. You know, they're not risky throws. Josh isn't going to take a shot with a two-score lead in that period. But it's easy completions. You're putting the ball in your best player's hands. And, yeah, I thought the second – I loved what the Bills did in the second half. And, you know, you could talk about the teams that the Tennessee Titans played or, You know, they're generally behind in games, so that helps them kind of control yards from the other team. They come into the game with the number one statistical defense in the league, but the fact that the Bills put up 34 points on them was pretty impressive.
Yeah, good point. Eric, I know you follow the league, you know, all over really closely. We've had conversations where you'll bring up random things you've seen from the day before, and I always like that. And I wonder with that, not to put you on the spot, but if you think about the MVP award, I've gotten more and more interested in sort of the weekly conversation about the MVP. And here's Allen, who it's not like that it hasn't been established how good he is before, but no picks, and we're almost halfway through the season. And that's something that's counter to what I think sort of the simple narrative is about his game, like said, sort of what the butt is when it comes to Allen and sort of like whether he could be an MVP or what have you. So this year, whether you want to put it in context, the context of the award or not, just is he playing differently for you? Is the conversation changing about him to the extent maybe where there's an opening for him to win?
I would think so. I mean, if you take away the turnovers last year, which you can't do, but if you took away the turnovers last year, Josh runs away with the MVP award. The narrative, ever since the start of last season against the Jets when he had four turnovers, the whole narrative the entire season was Josh just turns the ball over too much. I mean, it was just set in stone from the Monday Night Football. It was Josh Allen versus Aaron Rodgers. It's the big injury. The Bills lose. Zach Wilson, who plays every snap with three snaps in that game. And I felt like it was just set in stone last year. And so now this year he has two turnovers, but just two fumbles, zero interceptions. I thought his answer last week was perfect when they asked him about it. And they said, are you playing differently? He was like, well, I've thrown interceptions this year. They just haven't caught them.
Right.
But I'll say this. If that's your narrative and that's why you wouldn't give him the MVP last year, okay, well, now what's your story this year? And I don't know. And I get it. I love Josh, and I like him as a person. I love him as a player. And I've defended him since the day he got to Buffalo. But I feel like there's been a constant narrative in the media of people who have defended their pre-draft evaluation of him over and over, which has hurt him when it comes to when it comes to accolades, when it comes to all pros, when it comes to MVP awards. And it seems like he's putting that to rest. And, you know, I think some of it's style of play. There's been some, you know, we've talked about it before, and kind of this everybody eats system. Joe Brady's scripting some easier throws for him this year, but he's also taking some shots down the field, and he's taking some chances through tight windows and showing off his arm strength to where it's not like he's playing a dink and dunk game either.
Yeah, I really like that yesterday. It seemed like in the second half, I mean, we've already kind of covered this, but I just want to add it in here, like that they sort of got to back to on time. Like for a few weeks, going back even to the Baltimore game, which I know is like their first loss of the year, and the Houston game, I think, was some of this, that the passing game had really been reduced to effectively Allen getting out of structure and rolling right and chucking it 40 yards down the field to Ray Davis or to whomever. And I feel like yesterday was a return, and maybe it's no coincidence. Here's Amari Cooper. It was sort of a return to, like, you know, snap, step, throw, done. And I think, like, I love the, you know, Sandlot stuff. It's one of the great things that you've got here that's an advantage. You've got a player that can do that for you, but it's no way to live down in and down out through a 17-game season and hopefully a long run in the playoffs.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, that's an addition to, you know, what the rest of the offense should be, and I'm with you. And, you know, there was a back shoulder throw to Amari yesterday. There was a back shoulder throw in, you know, tight coverage, but it comes out, like you're saying, right at the top of the drop to Keon Coleman late in the game, and they ended up calling that not a touchdown. The Dalton Kincaid play that brought him down to about the 1 or 2 yard line, that was a mismatch. He identified immediately. It was just a, you know, a corner route. But, I mean, Josh knew where he was going with that ball based upon the matchup before that play probably started. And so, to me, yes, yesterday was more indicative of a passing game that, in a non-fluky way, puts up 323 yards. It wasn't, you know, the Ray Davis down the field play. It wasn't, you know, the Shakir play against Baltimore.
Right.
These are on schedule plays. I think there was one play early in the game to Keon where Josh rolled out to his right, ended up finding him late, But really, that might have been the only off-script pass play they had the entire day.
Yeah, it really is choose your flavor when it comes to this, because what he does off-script is kind of the wow factor, and you can think in terms of an MVP context, you can favor him for that. Of course, Mahomes also has a version of that, as does Jackson. But sometimes you just sort of want keep it simple, traditional, if you will, kind of an offense, and efficient, and that's more of what yesterday was, as you said. So, you know, this is the MVP too, but more importantly, the standings, Eric. I think the best thing about where the Bills sit here is that they don't look like they're on a lower tier, really, than the teams that we always talk about that they are expected to be competing with. Baltimore beat them bad. That is true, and we'll see what the Ravens look like tonight. But Kansas City is squeaking by. The Bills have beaten them, you know, if you want it, 3 years in a row in the regular season. And, you know, Houston losing, is Pittsburgh good? And the division is kind of in shambles right now. So I think you have to like where they sit.
Yeah, absolutely. I like where they sit. I mean, Kansas City sits at 6-0. They have a negative turnover differential. If you look at Mahomes' stats, they're not daunting by any means. Now, give them credit. They know how to win games. And whether that comes from confidence, from doing it year over year or what, they know how to win football games, but they're sitting at 6-0. But it's not like the undefeated Patriots season when they're sitting at 6-0 and you're thinking, who the heck's going to ever beat this team? And so, you know, Baltimore, you know, the way their style, you know, the way they're built, they're tough. And but can that translate to postseason victories? We'll see. It hasn't in the past, so it doesn't scare you in the moment right now, I guess is my point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not in a whole lot of fear of Pittsburgh, Cincinnati sitting at 3-4 right now. And when you look around the AFC, you know, Houston loses to Green Bay yesterday and didn't look very good. And now they're without Nico Collins, so they'll get back. So when you look around, yeah, you feel really good about where the Bills are. And as far as playoff picture goes, I know they announced they're going to lift Tua from the IR today, but you know the Bills have a 3-game lead right now, and you feel pretty good about that in the division.
Do you think the Jets are dead?
Oh, man. I love nothing more than them just getting crushed by Pittsburgh mm-hmm. last night. I mean, with all the hype with the Devontae Adams and just kind of the way it happened, and you know, we've talked about, you know, maybe the lack of leadership from Aaron Rodgers and, you know, all that they got going on over there. And maybe it was a 1-game bump and they came out against the Bills with their hair on fire. But, man, they just look like a team to me that if they face any adversity, they crumble. And, you know, maybe they prove me wrong. But I don't know that they're dead this year, but they sure look like they're just – in disarray. And there was so much hope when Devontae Adams came in.
Yeah.
But their biggest issue wasn't a lack of receiver production this year. It was their offensive line's awful. Their defense isn't playing up to what the standard should be. I understand they don't have Hassan Reddick, who may come back, and Jermaine Johnson was lost in the preseason. But to me, they look like a mess.
Yeah, I Rodgers talking after the game about like flatlining, right? The energy just wasn't there. I mean, that is bizarre considering where you are, like what your record is. Adams is there. The fact that that team wasn't energized by that, I think, is kind of telling that there's something maybe structurally off there. My guess would be that it's Rodgers and there's resentment toward him and the way he lords over the entire organization, even though we just got there, but that's a guess from out here. But it's weird to me. I feel like he was telling on himself by saying we didn't have any energy and we lacked urgency or whatever, however he phrased it. Because there's just no way that should happen in that spot last night.
Oh, I'm with you 100%. I mean, okay, the head coach is gone. You're as old as most people, you know, on the coaching staff. Everyone's looking to you, and you're the least energetic. You have the worst body language ever. You throw a towel over your head on the bench towards the end of games. Like, okay, well, what's everyone following within that organization? I mean, you're the leader of the team. I mean, you look at the other side of the ball. Is it Quinnen Williams? Is it Sauce Gardner? Maybe, I guess, C.J. Mosley is a veteran linebacker in the middle, but you're the one that everyone's looking to. And so when you say the entire team doesn't have energy and you sit on the bench with a towel over your head, how does that do any good?
Yeah. And, you know, furthermore, I'm just going to take this opportunity to just speed bag Aaron Rodgers, apparently.
Let's go.
You know, what do we got to do better? Well, first of all, ignore the media because, you know, he's got to get that shot in. Fine, whatever. Plenty of guys have
like
gone down.
Like he does.
Yeah, right. Plenty of guys have gone down that road. But even in taking responsibility, he shifts blame. It's like, I got to be better. We got to run the ball better so we can play action pass. Like, he just can't own it. Like, if I were on that team, I mean, I can't stand him, but I just feel like every time he tries to even do the right thing, he can't get all the way through it. He just can't. He just can't. He can't just say, I got to be better. Well, if we could run it better, then I could be better, is basically what he ends up saying. And I mean, I just want to drop kick him in the face if I'm on that team.
For sure. And then against the Bills, and Ryan Fitzpatrick put something out on Twitter about this, and I responded back with something I felt like was pretty clever if people want to look that up, but I took a shot of Fitz afterwards. But Fitz was like, essentially, what good does it do for you to take a shot at a wide receiver who, let's say he messed up in that moment, what good does it do to take a shot right. at him in the post game to defend yourself? You're a Hall of Fame, multiple MVP, Super Bowl winner. What good does it do for you to take a shot at one of your receivers who you likely had played a big impact and bring him in this offseason from L.A. in Mike Williams? What good does that do in that moment? And what does that do for the long run? Does that make Mike Williams play better? Does that make him hold his route better and not lose his footing, which was Rodgers' critique on the Taron Johnson interception against the Bills? Like, I just don't get it. And I'm not mad about it, though. I'll say that.
Right. No, I'm definitely not mad. I sound mad, but it's just,
no,
yeah.
I'm with you.
But right, yeah, that's exactly right. I'm glad you mentioned that because that's last week. And I said last week, I need to throw a better ball there. Like, you know, we don't need all the breakdown of where Mike Williams was supposed to go in verbiage that none of us are familiar with, the red line or whatever the hell he's talking about. I need to throw a better ball. He was wide open. Throw a better ball. That's it.
Right.
Sean McDermott at every turn is, I have to coach better. I'm like, coach, this was just a question about how did you lose the coin toss? Really, you don't have to blame yourself for everything that happens here negatively. Eric, glad, as always, for the chat, and we'll talk next Monday after the Bills game in Seattle. Have a nice trip.
Sounds good, guys.
All right.
Thanks.
All right, that's our man, Eric Wood. His appearance is here on WGR, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. And by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop at northtownkia.com.
Let's hear from some fans. 803-0550, Amari Cooper's Bills debut. The Jet loss. The Bills are 2.5 games up in the AFC East, going for a fifth straight title with almost at the halfway point of the season. 7 games down, 10 to go. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, Football Monday here on WGR.
Well, how much risk do we take when we get up in the morning to go drive to work? Everything, I think, takes risk. So to answer that question, every time we all suit up, we're all taking a risk that we could potentially get hurt, whether it's a concussion, a broken bone, anything. You get up off of the bed the wrong way, you potentially could risk you spraining your ankle. I'm just risking any and everything.
Tua Tagovailoa back in week 8. Apparently. Looks that way. I always thought this was where we were headed. Not that I knew anything, but he walked off the field and stayed on the field in the Bills game when he got hurt. And a day or two after that, the report was intends to keep playing. Then you had McDaniel last week saying that this is going to happen. We don't know when yet. And now, like, first opportunity, he is coming back in. And they need him. They're 2-4, still alive, but not looking good. They have Arizona, who plays tonight. This week, and then they come here.
And the big news on that front today seems to be that he's not going to wear the Guardian cap in the games. Taylor Rapp of the Bills has chosen to do that. I don't know. I'm going through a series of tweets from Marcel Louis-Jacques, who's covering the Dolphins, like he worked here for ESPN covering the Bills for a few years. And there seems to be, like, the NFL's made some claims about its ability to reduce the occurrence of concussions, but there isn't any real dependable data, it seems like. So
would it hurt, though?
I would think it wouldn't hurt, right? I think that's the least you could say is that it wouldn't hurt to do it, but I don't know. I'm not. I don't think he shouldn't be allowed to play, and I don't think he should have to do anything he doesn't want to do. I mean, I'll be as uncomfortable as anyone if he gets blasted again like he's been in the past. That is scary. But players come back from concussions all the time. This one is mostly, I think, first of all, it's a high-profile position player, quarterback, obviously. But the optics of the original trouble 2 years ago, I think, are what still it pushes us to treat him not like a regular player coming back from a concussion, because we think that they hid the first one against the Bills, and then a week later in primetime, I mean, look, I'll admit that was not an ordinary-looking concussion with the fencing pose or whatever happened there with his fingers. I mean, that was really, really scary stuff.
4 days later.
Right.
Thursday night.
That's right.
After Sunday.
And then, you know, you've had he lapsed into some version of that in week two against the Bills. It wasn't the full-on like you saw in the Cincinnati game, you know, again, a couple of years prior, but there was some of that. And so I just feel like it turns the heat way up on this player specifically, but I don't think it has. I mean, I understand all that, but it doesn't push me to like, oh, the league should step in or something, or they should make him wear a guardian cap even. Go do what you're going to do. I mean, I'm not in a position to stop you. Hockey players come back all the time from devastating-looking concussions. So, I don't know, I'm not all bent in the... I don't have a side, really. The go play is my side.
Right. You, like I have said, too, you defend his right to play. That's it.
Yeah.
And I do think that's maybe a good point, how there's maybe more... There is, I would say, more scrutiny on him because of the suspicious way that it started last season, right? This was only last season. So I think that there is a...
No, it was 2 years ago. He was healthy all last year.
Okay, right.
It was
2 years ago.
22 season. Yeah.
2 years ago. So, yeah, I think there is a feeling like this guy needs to be protected. And, okay, I mean, you can feel that way. I get it. But what does it come down to? Should he not be allowed to play? I think he should, like you said.
And I also would fully respect him if he, after this one, had decided to walk away.
I would respect anybody for
right.
not
I mean,
wanting to play football.
Any player who decides, like, I've had enough of this. I don't want to risk getting hit like this again and being, you know, potentially damaged in my, you know, whatever, the rest of my life. I mean, that's also well within your right to do, and I would never criticize a guy for doing that. So, you know, I can't be any more clear about it than that. There's so much debate about, you know, again, it's just the cesspool that is social media at times. It just seems like there's a lot of, you should wear the guardian cap. Really? I mean, like you said, it couldn't hurt, but I don't know. I'm not here to tell him what he should be doing.
Doesn't seem, though, like getting out of bed is as risky as playing in the NFL.
No, I would be inclined to agree.
There's risk in anything. Well, yeah. You know, I'm an odds guy, and that's going to be a tough one for me. Because certain things are more dangerous. My dog needs to learn the odds when it comes to cars. Because she is so little and quick that I took a walk with her today, and we have to cross the street. And on our way back, cars are coming. It's not always that there's traffic, but in this case, and she just jumps at them. And I've got her already like 10 feet off the road, but if I don't have like a very tight grip on the leash, she's jumping in front of that car and it's over. Like she wants to do that. So that's a little scary. Like we have to figure out, we got to get her in a little bit of a better place when it comes to cars. I don't know how to do it, but don't let go. But, you know, it can be so random. Like, you just get distracted, and then she jerks and pulls a leash out of your hand, and goodbye. Like, that, not a great thought.
No.
Not a great thought. No. Come on, Margo. She's got a lot going for her. She loves apples. It was her birthday on Saturday. She turned one. We got her an apple from the backyard. I wanted to give her a reward for doing well with going potty. So then we went to the apple tree and grabbed one, and she takes it in her mouth, like by the stem, and it almost covers her entire face.
Right.
It's hilarious.
She's so tiny, right?
The pictures of Margo, you know, transporting the apple in her mouth all the way to the house.
Does she have to stop to rest, put it down, and then continue?
Sometimes it's just too big. She takes the steps more slowly because it's a lot to handle. Let's go to Bob here. Hi, Bob.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling, Bob.
I got two questions. One is, what's happened to the safety Edwards that we got from Kansas City? When we had picked him up in the offseason, he was projected to be the starter at safety with Rapp. And then I believe he got hurt. I think he had a hamstring or something.
That's right. That's how I remember it. Yep.
And then we haven't seen, I don't think he's even played in a game so far, has he?
Oh, he has. He's played a lot of special teams. He might have a handful of defensive snaps, but I'm not even sure of that. I think there might be zero in defensive snaps, but he's covered kicks. He was inactive yesterday, that I know, but he has been active and he has played special teams in games.
Oh, okay. My other question was, because I was just listening to you guys talking about Tua coming back, and my question with that is, are the refs going to possibly be more vigilant on making roughing the passer calls on him because they don't want him to get hurt and have the league get a bad rap because they didn't ban him from the game after having...
No, I doubt it. I doubt it. I don't think officiating works like that.
They protect. They're already predisposed to protecting them. I mean, I don't know.
Roughing the passer is so cheap nowadays anyway. Yeah. That if he draws a flag for what looks like not that serious a hit, I'm not going to think it's because of his reputation. I'm going to think it's because this is how the league works now.
Right.
Any quarterback. Although, a guy like Allen probably doesn't get as much benefit of the doubt in terms of roughing the passer because he's so big and strong. Like the Cam Newton effect.
Right.
How Newton would talk about, and it seemed like he was right. He would just get, you know, drilled.
I think that's,
And stay on his feet or just not suffer as obviously from the hit and not get, the penalty wouldn't come.
I think maybe that's why we have seen Allen, he's exaggerated hits numerous times. And maybe he's doing that for that exact reason. You know, I mean, it's not the best look and you worry that it's going to come back to bite you at an inopportune time. Like if officials, you know, are aware of the reputation that I think he's got in that area. They could, you know, hold it against him at some point, you know, but I don't know.
I still hate it.
I don't think it's impossible what the caller is suggesting, that not from a league-wide conspiracy standpoint, but from a ref, just the official standing there in the backfield watching a play. If you know you're human, you try to keep emotions out of it. But if you're more worried about this player than other players, you might be predisposed to reacting differently when you know the same action happens to a different guy that happens to Tua. But I mean that's just too tangled to really unravel.
Yeah.
The bottom line is, like Mike already said, they already, I mean, talk about an abundance of caution. They're already, to me, pretty far over the line on that. That I don't know that you'd really even notice a difference.
We had this last Monday night. I mean, there were a couple of really cheap roughing the passer penalties. If you watch football in the course of a Sunday, you know, all day, you're going to see a few of them. But the flopping to me, like, I don't know. I don't want to live like that. I just hate it. I hate it in sports. I watched a soccer game Saturday morning, and they had the guy got a red card. He got thrown out because he threw a punch. And he might have thrown two, and they gave him a yellow, and then they reviewed it, of course, and that takes forever, and then it's a red because we have to do it that way. And the slow motion of the hand fighting in soccer, and then the guy who gets barely grazed, then it's like, you know, JFK, and his head, and he goes to the ground, his mouth, you know, wide open. Ah! It's just so stupid. I mean, I can't say it ruins the sport because I watch the sport. I like it.
Same here.
But it just, like, what a pox on a great game.
I feel like I hardly even see it anymore because I like soccer enough that I black out when it happens.
It's just so ingrained.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, does anybody even stop and say anything? It's just part of soccer. And so this guy, who was I watching? Man City, I think. No, I don't know. I forget. But the guy just completely crumpled from Richarlison, it might have been.
Like a flick?
It just, he had nothing. Yeah. I mean, that's the worst. Maybe Allen does have a point, but it's such a bad look. I didn't see it yesterday. It's not a thing from yesterday.
No.
But getting connected with the fans. Thank you, Bob. Brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Bills have been through kind of a lot so far through seven games, but they're sitting pretty here at 5-2, 2.5 up on Miami, 3 up on the Jets. Seattle next. There's news on DK Metcalf, who was injured yesterday. We'll have that for you as we continue. Football Monday. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR. Bills at 5-2. We'll look for your phone calls again after the update at 803-0550. They now head to Seattle for a rare meeting with the Seahawks. DK Metcalf was injured in, I think, a pretty impressive Seattle win yesterday over Atlanta. Haven't really spent a lot of time with that game yet, but I want to because I think they won by 3 touchdowns, but it didn't seem like the kind of game where, and probably was a turnovers game to win like that with what the yards looked like. +3. Okay. But Metcalf left with a knee injury. They talked like it wasn't that serious. Today they said week to week. So that should mean he will not play this week when they say week to week.
Right.
But we'll see. That's big, though.
That is very big, yes. I mean, that is a handful. Their passing game is fantastic. And he's, to me, he's the best player in it. I mean, nothing against Lockett and JSN, but you know, Metcalf is the guy you're scared of, I think, all over the field, really. But, you know, you think of contested catches, down the field, deep, whatever. So, yeah, that's big. As for the Bills, McDermott talked while we were talking with Eric Wood, and he offered no clarity at all, I'm assuming by choice, because I can't imagine they don't have more information than they had yesterday right after the game when he last spoke to the media. But anyway, wouldn't really put a timeline on Bernard, Samuel, or Dorian Williams. So your two starting linebackers both suffered injuries in this game, and he wouldn't even say day-to-day. Like, the more information still, they need more info, and that probably won't be till Wednesday now because they have a day off tomorrow, and so we'll be sort of waiting to find out what, unless, you know, something leaks out, you know, someone's, you know, here's the story on Bernard or Williams or Samuel, whatever. But all three of them left the game at points. I mean, Bernard, I think, was in and out a couple times. Williams, I think, played after he was hurt as well, but no details on how long they expect them to be sidelined.
I can wait.
All right.
I can wait a couple days. I don't need to know. I was glad to see Ray Davis make it into this game and scored, look good again, because there was, you know, some speculation. He's on the injury report, midweek tweak or something at practice, but made it and did well. Kenneth Walker, watch out for him as well with Seattle. He's had a couple of big games, the running back. So, yeah, interesting matchup. The clip of Geno Smith yesterday throwing the touchdown to Metcalf from like 30 yards is incredible. That pass is incredible. And I love it that he's doing well. 803-0550, Football Monday continues after sports with lines open for you. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.